Hello, everybody. We're taking a bit of a break, a mid-season Easter break from the main show this week. So you've got a bit of time to catch up on any episodes that you might have missed or not been able to listen to yet. You could do some of those writing prompts that I've been suggesting, or you can just have a break. But if you're still hankering for something to listen to, then what a treat is in store for you. It's some bonus content that I am producing for my Patreon, which is patreon.com/thinkingaboutwriting, where I'm going to build up a little catalogue of additional stuff. So if you've been enjoying this season of the podcast or previous seasons and you wanted to offer a little token of appreciation, that's the place to do it. But right now, I'm going to talk about a TV show that I watched that I thought was interesting and good, and I'll explain why therein. Otherwise, if that's not of interest to you, then we'll be back next week with episode 5 on writing dialogue and finding your voice. So I'll see you then. Hope you had a nice Easter. I hope you're doing well. And here's the stuff. All right. Hiya, Robin Taylor here, doing some bonus content for the Patreon. I will also be potentially releasing this episode to the general public as a taster for you to have a little nibble and see if it is interesting and appealing to you. Then go to patreon.com/thinkingaboutwriting. £3. Just to be nice, £5 to hear stuff like this. The aim here is to have a slightly more casual approach than the main show, so I won't be doing my presenter voice quite as badly, although I still do a bit, I can't help myself. Basically, talk about additional things, stuff that didn't make it into the main episode sometimes. I do cut things out. It might not seem that way, but I do cut stuff out. And also responding to news and events in the writing world, being a bit topical, which I try not to do so much on the main show. It's meant to be legacy content that lasts forever. I'll be going to a couple of conferences this month, so I might report back on those. And finally, one thing I'd like to do is talk about things that I've seen or listened to or even read recently, which I found interesting and want to talk about. And that's exactly what we're going to do this time. And the thing that I want to talk about is Madeleine Ashton. No, it's not. That's a Death Becomes Her reference for people who are in the know. Well, you'd know if you were in the know. Is for people who don't know. Now you know. Go and watch Death Becomes Her. It's great. No, the thing that I'd like to talk about is Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is a series on your Amazon Prime created by Donald Glover. I always want to say Danny Glover. That's wrong. Donald Glover from the likes of Community, Solo, Childish Gambino, he does that. He's an annoyingly multi-talented man. Co-created by Francesca Sloan, who worked with said Mr. Glover on Atlanta, a very critically acclaimed show, and rightly so. But yes, that's right. Normalize saying who wrote stuff. That's what I'm trying to do here. Admittedly, there are a lot of other credited writers on singular episodes. I'm not going to read all of their names out. I think they'll be fine that they didn't get the glory from my Patreon content that no one listened to. But you can find, if you're interested, just go and look on IMDb. That's what I did. But yes, the bulk is written by Ms. Sloan, with a couple of episodes by Donald. I'm sure he won't mind me using his first name. And indeed, it also stars Mr. Glover. Why is it Mr. Glover? It just feels weird. And Maya Erskine, who is brilliant, if you ask me, and is known mainly, I think, for Pen 15, which I only realized recently that's what it's called, because it looks like something else when it's written down. A naughty word. Well, not a naughty word, a biological word. A sex organ word, which is fine. I mean, you can say sex organ word. I'm getting off topic a little bit here. That'll probably be a theme on these. I did say they were casual, didn't I? But yes, it's an interesting show to me, because not only is it enjoyable and well written, but I think it says quite some significant things about the state of TV and streaming at the moment. And indeed, you may well be thinking, as soon as I said Mr. and Mrs. Smith, you might have thought, what? That 2005 action comedy-esque thriller starring Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. I'll say her name again. Angelina Jolie, which ultimately led to their relationship and the heartbreak of Jennifer Aniston. Yes, it is a reference to that, but quite a different beast. But straight off the bat, you can see that there's something there about IP, which is, of course, well, not of course, you might not know, is intellectual property, which is basically a pre-existing idea which is taken up and utilised. And the reasons for this are fairly apparent these days. Obviously, brand and name recognition is really useful in a rather flooded marketplace with all the streamers and so on. The simple fact you can say, oh, like that thing that I've heard of before, that can be useful just to get people's interest somewhat. And you can sort of look on the opposite side of things in a way that if this idea had come out and wasn't called Mr. and Mrs. Smith, people would go, well, it's a bit like Mr. and Mrs. Smith, isn't it? So you might as well just embrace it. I don't necessarily know about the origin of the idea, and if they said, oh, actually, yes, we should compare it to that, or if they were fully inspired by the original. Probably could have done some research if I was that way inclined. But I looked on IMDb, didn't I? What more do you want? Blimey. Though I did learn that this was initially intended as a collaboration between Donald Glover and our old friend Phoebe Waller-Bridge, but it didn't work out, possibly due to artistic differences. I didn't delve in much deeper than that, I just was like, oh, that's interesting. It's a funny one. Watching it, I can't quite imagine her in that role doing that. I could imagine it using the power of imagination, but it would be weird. It would be very different, I think. And maybe that's just because Maya Erskine's just so good in the role, in my opinion. It would lose a lot of itself if she wasn't playing that part. But, you never know, I suppose. In some ways, I'm glad that they had a big bust-up in the writer's room and that didn't pan out, because I don't think I'd like it quite as much. That's just my opinion, though. But yes, ostensibly, it's about a man and a woman who apply for a job at a strange organisation whom they never encounter face-to-face, who sets them on missions of espionage and subterfuge and assassination, where they must act as though they are a married couple to keep up their facade and are stationed in a incredibly lovely townhouse, I guess, in New York. I should say lavish. Ooh, aspirational lifestyle. So you might be wondering, what are the similarities and the differences between these two creative ideas? Well, it does have the same fundamental thing of two spies, stroke assassins, in a relationship. But unlike in the movie, the two lead characters in the show who become named John and Jane Smith, they are entirely aware of the situation that they're in. In the film, it's kind of the idea that they're both assassins and they're hiding it from the other one, and they eventually find out when they're targeted to kill one another. Whereas in this, they are working together. And in actual fact, it's one of those shows where it's not really about what it initially seems to be about. It is in a way, but it's quite clear that the underlying significance of it all is that this pair are effectively representative of a couple going through a relationship. for the sake of the story, they're married from the first moment that they meet each other. But over the course of the series, it's about how they court one another and the development of their relationship. And, you know, normally, I think in these situations, people might think I'm being like, oh, you're being clever, aren't you? You're trying to see things that aren't really there. But this is interesting. Point number two is that I think the show is very upfront about what it's doing, particularly in the episode descriptions on the streaming platform, where in each episode it's really, really apparent what they're doing is showing the stages of a relationship. You know, they sort of talk about a first date, a second date, going on a double date, having kids, breaking up. Like, they make it really obvious. They say it's their second date and this time, and then there's a story within that. And again, I think that's quite a sort of response to where things are at the moment of how to make a show appealing to an audience, how to make sure that they want to stick around and keep watching it. I think it's quite difficult sometimes when you look at a series outline on a streaming platform and it just seems like episode after episode, and especially when it's like an American one and they're very long runs and it just seems like it's going on forever. And also they have to be quite conscious of not spoiling themselves and being quite vague. And so you can just look at it and say it just seems too much. It's a bit too overwhelming to think, oh God, what I've got to watch 12 of these, and they all sound kind of much the same. Whereas in this, with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, they're very much saying, look, this episode is this episode is this. There's a clear trajectory across the series. Things are going to evolve and all of that. And as soon as you see that, it feels like a less daunting premise. You're like, okay, right, okay, I don't have to sort of necessarily invest so hard. I'm having to really keep up with what's happening. Now, you could sort of argue, is that a case of dumbing down the audience experience, of basically telling people what's going on rather than relying on subtext and the like? And, I mean, there's an argument for that, but the counter-argument to that is the show itself isn't doing that quite as blatantly as the episode descriptions are. Yes, it's there, and yes, it's, you know, it's not hard to ascertain that's what they're doing, but it's not so forcefully shoved in your face as it is in the descriptions. There is room for you to go, oh yeah, oh, that's clever, oh, and I see what they're doing. So in some respects, I think it's kind of inviting you to enjoy it and not necessarily punishing you in the way that some writing can sometimes, where it's like it is really unapparent what the subtext is. And you're potentially missing out if you can't figure it out yourself, or you've got to go and watch some long, elaborate YouTube video explaining the hidden meaning of all this stuff, and then you go, oh, and you feel like an idiot. And in that sense, it's kind of about accessibility, really, isn't it? And I think there's important lessons in that for writers as well. I often say to writers, what's the episode about? And especially when they're doing a series plan, go, what is the identity of that particular episode? Because it can feel quite tempting to just flow through things along and everything's just a rolling narrative. And as a consequence of that, you don't feel like they've got those strong definitions within themselves. And it just can sort of turn into a bit of a drudge, or feel as if things are sort of stalled and treading water or getting repetitive. Whereas if you can have that sense that things are building and changing and evolving, whether that's the story or the relationships, as in this show, then that's just naturally more engaging for the audience. It also shows a bit more promise to the people who are then looking at those episode plans and going, oh, okay, like you've got a vision of where you're going. But there are certain episodes where it's a bit more apparent what's going on. There's one where they're tasked to protect Ron Perlman, who's just basically acting like a kid the whole time, and it very quickly slips into those kind of parental child relationships. And that's just a really fun approach to it, where it's all very self-aware, obviously, and it's not sort of just being clever kind of thing. It's embracing the intention of the series, which is really nice to see. If we're being critical, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, being a bit critical. I'm not the kind of guy who's going to go, it was amazing, perfect, 10 out of 10, don't change a thing. That's I'm not that kind of person. I would never job if I thought like that, because I'd just read scripts and go, good job, well done. I always have to sort of see the things I think, oh, that could be better, maybe, or, you know, there's a different way of doing that. But yes, you could say there is a bit of a sort of duality to the show, in the sense that it is an action thriller on the surface, but a relationship drama, really. And there are some times where it does feel a little bit as though there's not as much action as you'd actually expect, and not necessarily that much variation within it. It feels like there's a lot of sort of chases and fight sequences, and that there was potentially a bit more room to be innovative in terms of what they were getting up to on these missions that they're being sent on. I mean, I don't necessarily have suggestions for what that could be, but it feels like there was room to sort of play around with it a little bit more. And you could sort of see how an audience might struggle with that a little bit if they think they're coming in for, you know, big set action sequences, and then they're actually being confronted with quite a lot of stuff that's personal, emotional stories, and that could be off-putting to some, maybe. I mean, for me, I think all the relationship stuff is really good. It's really interesting, and it feels very believable, and the characters are interesting and complex, which can sort of allow you to sway an allegiance between them, which is obviously really important with something like this. You don't want to feel too much on one side. I mean, I sort of had a natural affinity for Jane, because I think I just generally do have more affinity towards women in my life. That's a personal thing. But you can still see the sides of her where you go, oh, no, oh, that's not great. She's got her strengths and her weaknesses, as we all do. But you never sort of feel like, oh, he's an idiot and she's completely in the right. You can see how the things they do are sometimes good and sometimes bad. And there's just some sort of nice touches, especially in the sort of where they are in their lives. They talk about getting a job and saying, oh, nobody else wanted me, because they've had rocky career paths and things like that. But the fact that that's sort of reflecting on their relationship as well, that presumably nobody's wanted them romantically either, or that, you know, they've had their own troubles in that department, I think that makes them sympathetic but also complicated, which I really like. Again, you don't want your characters too simple or specific in the feeling that they can only do one thing and be one thing, and they can only respond to situations in one particular way. It sort of underestimates human beings, that we do adapt and change. We don't just stay one way, and you can still have a strong, clear character who surprises you occasionally and who changes over the course of a story without it feeling laboured. So it handles all of that well. So that was the main appeal, certainly. If we talk about the tone of the show, it's very funny. There's a lot of wittiness to it, but not so much that it kind of challenges the reality too much. And I think there are quite a few interesting things when it comes to the setup, because it is so extreme in its ways of just two people being hired to basically go on international assassination missions and get away with it. And there are certain times where you sort of often talk about the little voice in my brain, the logic voice, going, well, why would that happen? That doesn't make a lot of sense. Even silly little things like they're talking about their missions very blatantly in public. So I think, would no one be listening in and going, what? And I think it's one of those things where you just have to kind of go with it, really. And, you know, I've talked about logic in the past on the episode, thinking about logic, was it? Probably. That there are different strata on this, almost. Sometimes really egregious logic where it's just like, it just doesn't make sense and it's like really bothering you. That can spoil something that could otherwise be good and work. It kind of depends on how big an issue that is. I think some people can just quite happily go along for the ride with something and not worry about that kind of stuff. And people like me, who are anally retentive or something, we can be a bit more like, but. There's a difference between plot holes and, look, that's just that reality, all right? Stop worrying about it. Stop having the stress. If the story's not that great, then bad logic is kind of the least of the problems in a way. In some respects, bad logic can be a focus for you rather than worrying about the quality of the thing itself, or that becomes an explanation. They didn't even do this. They didn't even think about that. It sort of shows a bit of sloppy writing, doesn't it? Or like, you know, it's just not really given the audience the respect that they're due. And I think the sort of third one, which is the Mr. and Mrs. Smith situation, is where, because you're enjoying the show, you don't really worry too much about what's actually going on and the reality of it, and getting that sense pretty quickly that this isn't a real depiction. This isn't honesty and truth in the sense of there are weird spy organizations. I mean, you could argue there's a bit of a having your cake and eating it aspect to the whole thing, that they do stir up intrigue a little bit. And sort of making, oh, yeah, what about that person? Oh, aren't they mysterious? But then basically kind of give you a bit of almost like a middle finger and go, it wasn't actually relevant or important. Which, you know, I found quite fun myself. And yeah, you know, if you're watching it from a writing point of view, you can see there are a lot of your classic techniques for audience enjoyment, which is a sense of jeopardy, that if they fail three missions, then they're going to be terminated. So that gives the whole thing a bit of a impetus for them to succeed. And there's quite a few little fun setup and payoffs, which always feel like rewards for the audience in a way. It's like, oh, I remember that. Oh, yes. Oh, very good. And they've got your classic cliffhanger ending as well, which is another sort of sign of the times, which is weird because so much stuff these days just gets cancelled. We're living in this weird reality where something popular can just get axed, something can get made and then just get removed from all streaming services, and there's no physical copy of it, or, you know, a movie, the Acme movie, which just got deleted. I always respect the ambition of these shows, and I see the necessity of like having to put that thing on at the end of like, what's gonna happen, so that everyone goes, oh, we want another series. I don't know if people even do people write letters and stuff like that anymore. I don't think they do. Like, do execs see the cliffhanger and go, oh, well, because there's a cliffhanger, that's going to influence my decision? Well, there was no cliffhanger, well, then I don't have to commission another series. Yeah, I mean, I get it, but it's also frustrating when the story never gets finished. I'm still bitter about Deadwood, which got cancelled after three series and just had a cliffhanger ending. Or just, I don't know, it was a cliffhanger, it was just an incomplete ending and you kind of wanted a resolution. And it can't be one of those things where they just make it 20 years later because they all look bloody old now, just like me. So yeah, I don't know if it'll get a second series or not. I hope it would. It'd sort of be interesting to see what they do with it and where they could take the characters, considering they've kind of done the life cycle of the relationship in series one, and obviously relationships change over time. Yeah, so that's it really. I mean, is it a perfect beast? Well, no, what is? As I just said, nothing's 10 out of 10 in my eyes. Well, I mean, maybe some things. Maybe I'll talk about that one day, of what I think is. I'm not even going to say perfect. Close to perfect. There's some stuff out there. But it's certainly an interesting show. It's quite a slick sort of beast for the main part. It's got a little bit of pacing issues here and there, but nothing egregious. Like, I mainly watched it because I got offered a 7-day Amazon Prime for free. I was like, yeah, all right, and then I'll speed watch this. And, you know, and I did speed watch it. And sometimes when you try and speed watch something, you sort of think, oh god, do I have to watch another one of those? Whereas with this, I was like, yeah, and I wanted to see where it went and I wanted to see what happened. So that's promising, that's engaging and compelling, isn't it? Lots of the qualities that we aspire towards. And it's telling a pretty conventional story. I mean, it is basically boy meets girl, but they're killer spies. And can we all relate to that in a way? If we are going to live in this weird world of everything having to be based on something else or share a name with something else, then I'd rather it was doing something imaginative with that and not just replicating it or remaking it. It sort of reminds me of something like Battlestar Galactica, where they take the core of something and make it into something very, very different. I think that's where we kind of want to go. I mean, maybe I'll do a whole one of these on IP at some point. I think it's interesting to think about what impact that's going to have on newer writers who probably don't want to write something that's already been done. And when they're starting out, certainly aren't encouraged to do that. If you're trying to prove who you are to people as a writer, I don't know that the way to do that is go, here, I've rewritten somebody else's idea. I mean, that obviously is a consideration down the line when you're trying to get stuff made, because that's happening, not so much in Britain as it is in the US. I mean, in the UK, it's much more about adaptation. I'm doing the thing now. I'm talking about it now that I said I was going to talk about another time. But who knows if I'm going to do that many of these. It depends. This could well turn into Robin rambles away to himself and nobody listens. It's not that different from the main show, is it? No, some people listen to that, don't you? It might be you. Right now, I'm pointing at you through the microphone. But yes, let's wrap it up. I've got to go back and edit this because I paused a lot during this, and I'm going to cut it down and make it sound like I'm eloquent and know what I'm talking about. Deception. But if you do want to support the show, or if you already are and that's why you're listening to this, then you can be a Patreon member. I've got it set to £5 a month at the moment. I don't know what's appropriate or right, but you can always do that thing where you just subscribe for a month and then listen to all the content and check it out and then unsubscribe immediately. So maybe wait until I've built up a bit of a catalogue and then you can do that, potentially. I like that this show is free, essentially. Well, it is. It's completely free and it's ad-free. But it has cost me a little bit of money to make. So it seems sensible to attempt to recoup that. I probably won't, but I'm attempting. This is an attempt. Yeah, that's about it, really. Go and watch Mr. and Mrs. Smith if you're looking for something to watch. And you've either got an Amazon Prime membership or a free trial. Or don't watch it. If you don't like the sound of it, don't watch it. Or go and read the Wikipedia page on it and it'll tell you the entire plot probably. And you can imagine it. That's a nice way to spend your Saturday evening. All right, good. I hope that wasn't boring. Do I do the traditional goodbye? Or do I just, like, this is bonus content goodbye? Like, bonus bye? I don't know. No. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.